Okay, you're good to go.
Okay, the Senate Committee on Human Services and Rural Health Policy will come to order. We're going to hear House Bill 3623, and Representative Barton Smith and Senator Diane Rosenbaum, if you're here.
We just called. I think okay. She's on her way.
So she's on her way, and would you tell us about the bill?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3623 is asking for a nonprofit organization to supply the Oregon Liquor Control Commission with materials regarding human trafficking. It will allow the OLCC to determine if the materials are offensive or inappropriate, and if so, not include them in the mailing. It establishes a number of copies that the OLCC sends, not to exceed the number of copies supplied by the organization. This act is repealed January 2nd, 2012, but it has an emergency clause effective on passage. There's no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal, and the fiscal is just a minimal. And it moved off the House floor, 59 ayes, 1 excused, and it moved out of the House Committee on Human Services unanimously with 10 votes.
Representative Barton, your name is on here first, so go for it.
Thank you, Chair Morissette, Senator Berger. Thank you for having us today. Members of the committee, today you will hear from people far more knowledgeable, I would say, than any elected official on the topic of human trafficking. I'd rather defer the time to them. I just wanted to make myself available to this committee to the extent there are any questions about the bill itself.
I'm sorry. Did you introduce yourself in the district?
You know, thank you, Mr. Chair. I forgot to do so. I'm Brent Barton. I represent House District 51.
Which is?
East Clackamas County, Mr. Chair.
Oh, thank you. Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jefferson Smith. I represent District 47 in the Oregon House, which is mid-Multnomah County. I likewise will leave the details of the challenge we face to the experts from whom we will hear shortly. I wanted to give just a little bit about how I got involved, say a few thank yous, and give my plea to this chamber and to this body, which goes beyond this bill. When we got started, I want to specifically call out Representative Barton, the senator to my right, and Commissioner Diane McKeel and the advocates who are here today. When they first approached me and us about this, my impression was that human trafficking was a smaller, rarer, and further away problem than I now understand it to be. It is, first of all, much more festering. I will give just two facts. The average age of entry into international slavery-based prostitution is estimated to be roughly 12 or 13 years old for a young woman. I should call her a girl at that point. Fact two, the international human trafficking industry is a $44 billion a year industry. This is a challenge of global proportions. It's also closer in places like my district where the economy is particularly hard hitting, and our location near the I-5 corridor, we have become a hub for smugglers and pimps to move victims of the forced sex industry through cities along the West Coast. The bill will do a few things. I will set those, well, I probably should say them just in case my good friend, Senator Rosenbaum, does not. First, help in four ways. First, direct relief to victims. 2 to 5% of the calls that come into this hotline are generally from victims. Even if, to steal Representative Barton's line, who stole my line, even if we save one life with this bill, it will be a greater service than some of us provide in this chamber. When they passed a similar bill in Texas, the average calls went up from 400 calls to 600 calls a month, leaving that probability somewhat high. Second and third, it will help 25 to 35% of the calls or tips reporting instances of human trafficking, and the hotline directs agencies to resources for supporting trafficked victims. And last, to close, the real reason I wanted to testify, there are two kinds of earthquakes that exist. There are earthquakes that build tectonic pressure and earthquakes that release tectonic pressure. This needs to be the kind of bill, the kind of earthquake that builds tectonic energy, that makes it more likely to do more about human trafficking rather than less. This is, as the advocates have liked to say, a first step, a smaller bill about a bigger thing. I appreciate your support for the smaller bill. Also appreciate our raised attention to the bigger thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am State Senator Diane Rosenbaum from District 21 in southeast and northeast Portland and a little of Clackamas County in Milwaukee. And I am appearing today as one of the sponsors, one of the Senate sponsors of House Bill 3623. And I think you've heard quite a bit from my House colleagues and co-sponsors about the need for the bill. I'm also appearing today as co-chair of the Oregon Women's Health and Wellness Alliance, which is a bipartisan coalition that I think you're all well familiar with that has existed in this building for over 16 years now. And Senator Manas Anderson, I know, is a former co-chair of the same alliance. We prioritized just a very small number of bills for this session, not the formal agenda that we normally have, and we selected this bill because, as I'm sure you're well aware, human trafficking is tragic. It is indeed something that goes on all the time below the radar screen, even more in rough economic times. But what is very clear is that the victims of human trafficking overwhelmingly are women and children. And that's why, for the Women's Health and Wellness Alliance, this is a priority issue. I think that the approach taken in this bill is one that is not going to solve the whole problem, but will actually do a lot of good at letting people who are victims know in a serious way that help is available to them when they're ready to get it. And so that's a positive step. And I hope that you will give favorable consideration to the bill and pass it out as your workload allows. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Yes. Senator Verger.
Yes. Representative Smith, I think you've probably come to the core of the problem that your bill will help in some way, and that is that in my work with the human trafficking, what I found was that people said, you know, that is a terrible situation. We don't have a lot of it in Oregon, but it's really bad. So I think that what you need to do, and badly, is to try to get people to be more aware of what really is going on. And some of it is insidious. It's not just out there plain for people to see and to identify. It's in very subtle ways that becomes a human trafficking. So thank you for bringing a bill that will help in that regard. It's extremely important that we do so.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. And I will amplify only by offering something that I carved from my words for brevity, and that was the analogy to the domestic violence problem, which particularly 30 years ago was something that people just didn't talk about, and that made the problem fester further. I think one of the reasons it's worth testifying in hearings like these, why it's worth even speaking to on the floor for senators that can, why it's hugely valuable to have somebody like Senator Rosenbaum championing this bill, is that we need to get this into the sunlight and have more people understand. And even this small notice bill will help people understand that prostitution is not always a victimless crime and, in fact, is something we need to start paying closer attention to.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, follow-up, please.
Yes.
May I have a follow-up? Yes. I just want to say, Mr. Chair, to those that are going to be testifying on this bill and those who have brought the bill, that I'm going to have to leave at 2:30, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the testimony of anyone in this audience or this bill. It simply is my schedule for today. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Verger, thank you for your comments. I just wanted to take a moment while on record and acknowledge Multnomah County Deputy Bickford, from whom we will hear soon, I believe, a person who has truly, tirelessly devoted, I would say, the bulk of his professional life to this issue. I think he has done more to raise awareness about the issue of human trafficking in Oregon than perhaps any other, and it's a privilege that to work with such a person.
Good.
He's probably blushing behind me.
He is. You hear it. I'll wait. Gets back to his normal color before I call him. Other comments? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Bickford, would you come up, please? And Diane McKeel and Howard Kenyon. Okay. Let's see. We'll start with Commissioner McKeel.
Thank you, everyone, for having us here today. I am Diane McKeel, Multnomah County Commissioner. I want to begin by thanking Representative Barton, Representative Smith, and Senator Rosenbaum for bringing this forward. The problem of human trafficking is one that is rarely in the headlines and mostly misunderstood in the United States. Passage of this bill could be a great step forward towards changing that. There's much work to be done to address this dangerous problem that exists across our state, and the passage of House Bill 3623 would be a significant part of doing so. There are various actions being taken across the state in an effort to increase awareness of this issue among the public, treat those who are being victimized, and punish those who are forced to engage in commercial sex or forced labor. In conjunction with the Oregon Travel Information Council, there will soon be posters with human trafficking hotline numbers and other information posted in 13 heavily used rest areas across the state of Oregon. 7 of those rest areas are located along I-5, which is the primary way of passage for traffickers on the West Coast. These conspicuous postings will increase the likelihood that victims and other travelers will call the hotline, whether they are a victim of trafficking or think they might know someone who is. We are also working with the Caldera Arts Film students to develop public service announcements around the issue. Comcast has agreed to air them on cable free of charge. We hope this will educate the public on this underreported issue. It is important that we make it impossible for the public to continue to ignore it. After meeting with Senator Wyden's office last summer and bringing this issue to his attention, he has instantly become one of the greatest advocates for the elimination of trafficking in our state and our nation. He has introduced Senate Bill 2925, which will provide block grants to states and local governments to provide funding for arrest and prosecution of pimps and traffickers, as well as create safe houses for the victims, complete with mental and physical health programs and treatments across the nation. If passed, it could be the beginning of the end for trafficking as one of the most low-risk and high-reward crimes in our nation. Finally, in Multnomah County, we are working on the establishment of a school designed to reduce the number of those who purchase sex. Basic economics show that where there is demand, there will be supply. Unfortunately, there is great demand for the purchase of sex in our state. By creating a diversion program as an alternative to the simple fine that those who are caught buying sex currently receive, we can begin to reduce demand. We hope to begin to educate Johns on the consequences of their actions and reduce the likelihood of recidivism for those crimes. Here in the Oregon Legislature, you have the opportunity to be first in this process. Human trafficking is a problem that has allowed to go unnoticed for far too long, and one that we must work to end as soon as possible. By showing that Oregon is willing to make a commitment to end this injustice, we can be an example to the rest of the United States. This bill has the potential to be the first step in a much broader movement to end the trafficking of humans. I urge you all to support it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Comments? Okay. Thank you.
I will. Since I know Commissioner McKeel personally, she first brought this to attention at we were at a women's event, and I forget which women's event it was. Maybe it was Soroptimus. Soroptimus from all over the Northwest region were meeting in Portland, mm-hmm. and she gave a talk on this. Last summer, I think, mm-hmm. or whenever it was. Yeah.
Very good issue.
I do have a question.
Yeah. Senator Winters?
Thank you. And thank you for bringing this forward. I did see the documentary on that was done on human trafficking, mm-hmm. and which is horrific. You mentioned the demand for the purchase, and if we didn't have that,
mm-hmm.
are there any plans to deal with this that particular side of the equation? And I can remember years ago when the individuals were identified, and I think we had an actual press exposure of individuals who were purchasing. That kind of, when I lived in Portland a lot of years ago, and the individuals didn't want their little their families to know mm-hmm. that they were out there purchasing. So what are the plans on the other side of the equation? So often we always, you know, deal with, and not just, I mean, the victims are usually the ones that actually bear the brunt mm-hmm. of all of this, with very little done with those who actually are violating the law. And so are there some plans for them as well as educating the public?
Yes, we're working with the district attorney's office to reinstate John's school.
Okay.
And so that is in progress right now. We hope to have that up soon. We're just looking at the structure of how to put it together to best deal with all of the issues around it. So.
And maybe this is a question for the DA, because a follow-up, you're talking about transporting across state lines mm-hmm. and those issues, and I'm assuming that there's some interstate compacts and perhaps, I hope, some linkages with our neighbors to the south and to the north and other places. Can you talk about that?
And Deputy Bickford would probably be the better one to answer that question for you. So do you want to?
Sure. Introduce yourself.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Keith Bickford. I'm a deputy for Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. My current position is the State of Oregon Human Trafficking Task Force Director. I actually have four different task forces that I work with. If I could talk a little bit about the interstate commerce and the fact that I'm currently working on sort of my own kind of a miniature Amber Alert for these children, both boys and girls, when they do cross or they do leave our state, if we're looking for them for whatever reason. I'm currently working on having maybe pictures, fingerprints, things like that sent to the other cities in the area that have a lot of the high volume trafficking of these minor victims, and just trying to increase the communication better for that as well.
Thank you. Did you want to go ahead and give
yes.
the other?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. I do direct four different task forces. I've had to split because of the problem we're having in Oregon. I've had to actually split the task forces into two different categories, one for foreign-born victims and then one for the domestic victims because of the numbers. And for each of those law enforcement task forces, I also have a victim assistance task force that helps with the support of the victims once they are found because of the amount of time and of cost for each individual victim. What I do also is I open new cases. I've had the privilege and the honor to talk with different victims from all over the world on our foreign-born side, as well as the young girls that are our own minor victims in just the state of Oregon. As I said, I open the new cases. I monitor those cases through the federal system and also through the state system. I also work very closely with the Polaris Project, which will have the hotline number for the nation. And I have a contact now there. They have a new person that's assigned to Oregon, which would be very helpful for us. I can tell you right now that just for me, I've had several calls directed to me from the Polaris Project of people making some sort of a report, and I've also had other people who were referred by the hotline as well that have called me for help or suggestions or whatever too. So I really firmly believe this is going to be a big help, and the fact that it's going to be along the I-5 corridor into places where these people are sometimes very well hidden. And also in different languages to help with the situation with the foreign-born as well. I'm looking forward to having this passed and start helping my job a little bit and make it a little easier.
I hope. Very important job. Questions? Okay, good. Thank you.
Yes, my name is Howard Kenyon, and I am the co-chair for the Human Trafficking Advisory Committee for the Oregon Center for Christian Values. I'm here today on behalf of OCCV, and I'm testifying in support of HB 3623. OCCV is a Christian advocacy nonprofit that serves Oregon's most vulnerable by educating and mobilizing Christian citizens to promote biblical justice for the poor, the sick, the oppressed, and the environment. We have a growing network of 1,000 readers and convene local chapters in Multnomah, Salem, and Washington counties. The Oregon Center for Christian Values applauds the efforts of both public and private that work to rescue those already enslaved, especially the Office of Commissioner Diane McKeel, Deputy Keith Bickford, Representatives Barton and Smith, and their staffers James Barta and Molly Ruskin, who are standing in solidarity with them today. The psalmist long ago declared in Psalm 82, 3 and 4, "Defend the cause of the weak and the fatherless. Maintain the rights of the poor and oppressed. Rescue the weak and needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked." Trafficked Oregonians, especially those who are under 18 years of age, are oppressed and need advocates to come alongside them to help maintain their human rights to a full and meaningful life. For much of the past two decades, I lived in Asia, Taiwan, Northwest China, Thailand, the Philippines, and Hong Kong. I saw many incidences when I wished I could have had such a hotline number to call. Instead, we worked to ensure that those we could help would be less vulnerable to the traps and snares of others. Human trafficking is wrong anywhere, but it is not just over there. My wife and I are now respite therapeutic foster care parents in Multnomah County for the Morrison Agency, and we are regularly faced with how vulnerable many of our citizens are to threats such as human trafficking. House Bill 3623 is along the lines of Amber Alerts. Give the public a number to call, a way to act when the slightest hint of trafficking is observed, or if a victim himself or herself is in trouble. We understand that this idea of promoting a hotline number through the OLCC's regular license renewal mailer can be implemented without legislation, and we know it is but an important step towards more comprehensive legislation for the future. Unanimous, decisive legislative action, like what we saw in the House last week, will increase the public profile of the cause itself, as well as the hotline stickers and their effectiveness. What is unique about the Polaris Project National Hotline is that they have the capacity to have 22 staff, 24 hours, 7 days a week, to constantly take calls, and are thoroughly trained to discern what kind of call it is and what kind of action or resources are necessary. Many cities and states across the country do not have the funding to have a 24/7 hotline of trained experts. OCCV investigated by calling the 1-888-3737-888 phone number and was promptly greeted by a trained call specialist in a crisis situation the second counts. The lives of our neighbors could be in jeopardy without the awareness and access to a 24/7 well-staffed hotline. Polaris Project in its 2 years has taken 14,000 calls from across the nation. 25% of those calls were actual tips for trafficking cases. The rest, more informational questions. In light of the short session and out of respect for the legislators' time and attention, we are not going to offer lengthy or multiple testimonies. We'd like to ask those who have traveled to Salem in support of the trafficking hotline bill to please stand up.
Thank you.
And thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of HB 3623.
Okay. Questions? Tell me a little bit more about Polaris.
Polaris is the nonprofit organization. Okay. They provide the phone service. These stickers.
Now, are they in national?
Yes.
Yeah, they're national.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Uh-huh. They're nationwide. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they provided all the funding for the stickers comes from private donations. The people that will be stuffing the envelopes with the OLCC will all be volunteers, many of the people that are here in this room today. Polaris is one part of this. It certainly involves the efforts because they work with the local officials, such as Deputy Bickford, so it's a networking situation that goes on across the nation, so that if a call comes from Oregon to Polaris, it comes directly back to Oregon. But because we're working in a multi-state situation, it also can make connections in California, Nevada, wherever. Yeah.
Where is it located?
Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C.
Not a question, but a comment. Mm-hmm. And I wrote this down as you were talking, and as I was reviewing the comments and the background that was written by our staff. And what we're talking about is a modern day form of slavery. Mm-hmm. I mean, we call it human trafficking, but actually, what we're talking about is a modern-day form of slavery, which this country outlawed years ago. And we can put any other words on it, but whether you're because it's more than just the sexual piece. As I read, here we're talking about domestic slavery. We're talking about, you know, totally misusing the human person and children. And I was when you said both male and female, and it's abhorrent to every fiber of our society. So I commend you for bringing this forward, and I think that, you know, everyone in this building would help to do whatever we can to end this barbaric practice. And it is barbaric. Mm.
Yes.
It is unconscionable, and I just needed to put that on record to frame it as exactly as what it is.
And we're talking about involuntary servitude of laborers.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And not just sexual exploitation, but it's just workers, people who are held. Mm-hmm. Could be illegal aliens who are being held with a threat of being sent back, and maybe, they probably wouldn't turn themselves in, but somebody else might. So we're talking about a broader range of abuse than just sexual.
As, Mr. Chairman, I have a pastor friend in the Portland area who has been counseling a man from India. He came under false pretenses, not his own pretenses, but what he was told, and has no access to his passport. He basically is in 24-hour slavery, 24/7 slavery, because he has no control over his life. It is not sexual slavery, though that doesn't, I mean, it's all abhorrent, shall we say. But the man is not here enjoying America. He is wishing he could go home, but he has no option in the matter. So you are correct. We do focus on the sex trafficking as a very significant issue because it is not a light issue, but we are faced with many different kinds of trafficking here in Portland, yes, in Oregon, excuse me, yes.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that was a very good report that we have, and we will close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 3623A.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3623A be sent to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Telfer moves House Bill 3623A be sent to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
I think yes. We've said it all.
Okay, we've said it all. Okay, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Monson.
Aye.
Senator Berger.
Excuse.
Senator Winter.
Aye.
Vice Chair Telfer.
Aye.
Chair Morrison.
Aye. Okay, Senate Bill 3623A has passed. We'll go to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and Senator Dianne Rosenbaum will carry the bill. Okay. Thank you very much for being here. And thank you all for being here, those of you who are the volunteers in the support group. Thank you. Can't do it without you, right?
Yes, thank you.
Right. Okay. Okay, we're going to hear, we will open a work session on, a public hearing on House Bill 3668. 3668. Would you give us an update on that, please?
Will do, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, House Bill 3668 modifies the date by which a licensed professional counselor and a marriage and family therapist must attest to having certain training and experience. It declares an emergency effective on passage. This left the House floor with 59 ayes, 1 excused. Moved out of House Committee on Human Services with 9 ayes, 1 absent. There's no revenue or fiscal impact on this bill, Mr. Chair.
Becky Eklund.
Good afternoon, Senator Morissette, members of the committee. My name is Becky Eklund. I'm the director of the Oregon Board of Counselors and Therapists, and I'm here today to speak briefly in support of House Bill 3668. This is a bill that is really introduced to address an unintended consequence from legislation that was passed during the 2009 session.
I can't believe that. We have worked so hard on that bill for so long, and we messed up by having an unintended consequence. I hope it doesn't take us long to correct the unintended consequence as it did to pass the bill.
Senator Morissette, I agree. Thank you. House Bill 2506 that passed during the 2009 session did a lot of things, but one of the provisions in there was to require licensees to attest to having diagnosis, training, and experience. The language said if they were not able to attest by January 1st of this year, they could no longer practice. Now, the bill passed. The bill was signed by the governor in June of last year, so licensees had until January 1st of this year to attest to that diagnosis and training and experience. We had we're a little confused about the timing and of the dates in the bill, because in one place it said by January 1st of this year, and then that provision of the bill was set to sunset in 2012. So we asked our Assistant Attorney General for advice on how to deal with the date inconsistencies and the time consequences. And the handout that I provided is an excerpt from the Assistant Attorney General's advice. And what she told us is that the board would be required to impose discipline on licensees who are unable to attest by January 1st of this year. Board's very concerned about that, not wanting to put people who've been licensed for many years providing services honestly and to now lose their licenses because they were unable to attest in the short period of time they were given to do that. And we created a one-page form where people could check the box, tell us, did they have the training, did they have the experience. We sent that out to over 2,000 licensees, and so far we've gotten them all back except for 127. Plus, we had a number of licensees turn in their licenses because they said we're not able to attest. The board has not taken action yet. They're hoping not to discipline any licensees, hoping that this legislation will pass to provide more time for those licensees to be able to respond, to document their experience and their training, and continue to provide needed services in the meantime.
Okay.
I'm happy to answer any questions.
And I notice there's an emergency clause.
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, my name is Larry Connor. I'm a licensed professional counselor from Portland. I am the co-director of the Oregon Coalition for Consumer Mental Health Protection and Choice, and I am one of the co-authors of the bill that passed last year, and I'm here to ask for your forgiveness. I'm sorry that we have to bother you with the mistake that we made in drafting the bill. When we negotiated this attestation section with the Oregon Psychological Association, and when we wrote it with the Office of Legislative Counsel, we were under the impression that there would be a two-year window where anybody who was licensed would have an opportunity to upgrade their skills, because that whole section, as Becky said, sunsetted in 2012. We learned to our dismay that that was not the case, that the way we had written it, in fact, required them to be done by January 1st of 2010. So we're here to fix it and to return it to what we intended it to be at the time. As far as we're concerned, it's a fairness issue. Those licensees who've been licensed for some time, there's 127 or so, they were licensed under the old rules. We changed the rules, and we would like them to have an opportunity to get their skills up to speed so that they can keep their licenses to keep offering services to Oregonians as they have for years. This particular House Bill 3668 does not change any content in the Practice Act. It just changes the date for the attestation. So I have given you written testimony with much more detail, but I wanted, for the sake of brevity, just to say I'm sorry. Please pass this legislative fix so that we can get on with our
business. Well, we'll think about it. And you worked long and hard to pass this bill originally, and we worked on this for a couple of sessions, and it's been very frustrating, and I'm very, very happy that we did it, and I'm anxious to make it work. So any other comments? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Yeah.
Okay. Others wishing to testify? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing, and we will open the work session on House Bill 3668.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3668 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Telfer moves House Bill 3668 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. And I will carry the bill. Yay!
Thank you.
Okay. The next?
No, the Verger is excused.
Let the record show that Senator Verger is excused. Thank you. Thank you. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 3669. And I've been waiting all day for this one.
That interesting.
This is fascinating. And it's very clear and simple until it's explained. Then it becomes very complex. But I'm sure that we will understand it once we get the explanation.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor, and I feel like I've been prompted to not explain this bill.
No, you must explain it.
So, by way of background, in 2007, the physical health, fully capitated health plans, and the mental health Medicaid plans worked with the state to put together a bill that became Senate Bill 163, and its intention was to make it easier for physical and mental health plans and Medicaid to exchange confidential patient information to benefit that patient's care. And in the process of that bill moving through the process, checks and balances were worked out to protect patient confidentiality and to get us, as plans, the ability to exchange the information we need to exchange. The unintended consequence of this bill is that those checks and balances actually became pretty much unimplementable, both on the plan side and at the agency side. And so we're back to ask you to repeal the law that we initiated in 2007. One less law in the books. It's very disturbing. I would say that in this process, before this session, we did work with all the partners involved, both physical and mental health plans, the counties, the state, and we did talk with key client advocates. There's no opposition to this bill, and people felt like the best approach at this time was just to repeal the bill, start with a clean slate, give the folks that are looking at mental health integration at the Oregon Health Authority the ability to come forward if any successor law is necessary as part of a larger integration strategy, but to at least at this point go back to where we were before, which is better than where we are now.
Oh, okay. questions, comments? Go ahead.
Hi, for the record, my name is Judy Moore Peterson. I am the Assistant Director for the Department of Human Services. I head up the Division of Medical Assistance Programs, and I'm here representing the department on this. The agency, as Martin referred to it. And just to speak to the fact that, indeed, we have found it pretty much impossible to implement as the bill is written today. And just to speak to a few of the things that we run into some challenges with is that we needed to be able to obtain a signed acknowledgement from everyone who receives Medicaid or the Oregon Health Plan. And on the surface, that doesn't sound like a true difficulty. We made the assumption that we would be able to do it via the application process and the reapplication process, and we went ahead and made changes so that we could get a signed acknowledgement. But then as we moved forward with our plan, we also realized that there are some people who do not come up for a recertification process that has them signing a new form, et cetera. It's part of our process to make it as administratively simple as possible to have the continuity of care to stay on the Oregon Health Plan. So consequently, we needed to also come up with a method to reach those folks. And then we had difficulty tracking who had signed and who hadn't signed. It was supposed to be part of our implementation, or this was at the same time that we were implementing our new MMIS, and it was prior to the go-live date. And it would have required changes to that, and it was essentially too late to make changes to our MMIS at that point. So we needed to come up with an interim way, and we simply did not have the technology at that time or the ability, the resources to develop a tracking mechanism for all those people who had signed or had not signed. So when it was brought up that that we look for other solutions and the idea of simply repealing the bill came up, we were in favor of that as opposed to trying to continue to obtain the signed acknowledgments on a going forward basis. There was several meetings in which discussion of all the various parties involved, including the consumer advocates, and there was general agreement that this was the best course at this time.
Okay, Senator Mona Sanderson, since it's your fault, when the time comes, you can carry the bill. But I love the fix-it bills. We've had two very simple fix-it bills, which it's kind of a relief without, you know.
I know.
But Mr. Chair, I would like to, because it was very important that we were able to some of us have been working for a long time to take physical and mental health and begin treating the body as one body. And this was part of the sharing of information to do that. So I do have a question of how many are we talking about when you said that you couldn't, that the numbers were such and in the tracking, and whether or not going forward in the future, and I know that there's serious problems with the MMIS system, and whether that's going to be reworked and be a part of this.
There were about 100,000 people who do not need to come up for a regular recertification using the regular application process, that we would need to obtain their signed acknowledgement form from. We have not pursued making changes to the MMIS at this time that would incorporate a tracking mechanism because of where we were moving forward with the possible repeal of the bill. So we have not, and at the present time with the MMIS, we are working on many other kind of issues, which if you would like to hear more about that, we can speak at a at another hearing another time about the MMIS side of it. But at the present time, we're prioritizing other elements on the MMIS, and that this is not creating a tracking system for this is not on that.
I guess what I would really like to hear at some point, we're going to not talk about MMIS, and that the provider groups and the agency and all will have somehow gotten together and fixed what we've been talking about for so many years, that if you sense my frustration, is because I am very frustrated. This has been ongoing for, God, almost ever since I've been back in this building. And I think until we do, that these kinds of, not only this issue, but probably other issues that we're working on that has to do with the relationship between where Mr. Taylor sits, who provides the information into the state system. And anyway, I'm not, I just needed to know how many we were talking about, and hopefully one day we will no longer have this issue of tracking data and how we input and get data back and encounter information that we need in order to make informed decisions, particularly as they relate to budget.
Thank you. Other comments? No other comments? Okay. Thank you very much. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 3669 and open a work session on House Bill 3669.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3669 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Telfer moves House Bill 3669 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, comments, seeing none, so ordered. And Senator Verger is excused, and Senator Mona Sanderson will rectify
bill.
Her. No, she will carry the bill.
She didn't do it. She didn't.
No, no, but she wanted to do it. She said it was.
They came to me, and we tried so hard to get there.
Really, I know, because we
did. Were you going to talk?
Brenda? Oh, okay.
I'm very frustrated.
We are adjourned.